Hey, what's up, YouTube? Today I'm here with Animal Well. It's this new game from Big Mode, and it's the first ever quadruple A indie game. It only costs...
Oh, so funny. I love Donkey.
Yeah, and it costs, you know, it's a good game. It costs like $900, you know.
Oh my god, this game makes me feel like I'm spending $900.
And just look at the graphics. Ooh, look at the graph. It's so shiny. It's so much better graphics than, and now
Neck
it's,
2, in, baby!
Instead of playing Animal Well footage, it's now like some like random game from like the N64, and he's like, the graphics of Animal Well look so good. I mean, like, look at these graphics. Ooh, boom.
And then Yoshi.
And then, like, 30% of the video is, like, a game that's not Animal Well. It's, like, some other game that has nothing to do with Animal Well.
Yeah, like Kirby Tilt and Tumble for Game Boy Color.
Yeah, exactly. GBA.
Is that the whole sketch?
Come on down the donkey's castle. Come on down the donkey's
or
castle.
Or I'm gonna eat your fucking shoes. Come on down to Donkey Castle.
That's no, but in all seriousness, gang, buy my video game that I made.
Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, I know. Did he do a Game of the Year's list and put Animal Well on it?
I think he probably did. I don't remember.
That's awesome.
What we're really here to advertise is Big Mode's newest game called Starve Providence. Right,
what's
Charlie?
That?
And you know what's what that? No, you don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is, no.
It's like,
is Big Mode like real talk, like, is Big Mode relevant for any reason other than the fact that it's Donkey?
Nope.
Great.
Why would it be?
Well, I guess let me rephrase. How much money is behind Big Mode? Like, is there like,
I have no idea,
like significant cash behind Big Mode, or is it just his like free advertising and like, or is there just sort of cultural value behind it? Because on the one hand, like, this was a cross-platform release, but I don't think that there was, like, any... I don't think there was, like, any marketing spend behind it. So, like, I don't really know.
No, he did all the marketing.
He did all the marketing, right? Yeah. So, it maybe...
Well, no, they had a market... Dan Adelman is, like, the other... This employee number two at
Big Mode?
Not at Big Mode. At the company... Like, the dev studio. It's, like... What do they call it? I forget the name of it. But, like, the company that made Animal Well is, like...
Oh, I thought Animal Well was just one guy.
No, Billy Basso made the whole game, but he has a guy that does marketing for him. He does, like, the business side.
Okay. And then, well, my question is, like, the Animal Well is not in a game engine that we're familiar with, right? He made the game engine.
He made the whole
engine. He wrote it from scratch. And so he wrote a cross-platform game from scratch. Like, it's on all platforms, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's on, like, Switch, too.
Mm-hmm. Not, so, well, like, I don't know about Switch, too.
Well, Switch as well. Switch. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I just think that's, like, kind of fascinating that, like, he, like...
I mean, he'd been working on it for a really long time.
Was he? Just,
yeah, I think so. I mean, okay. He wrote a whole engine. That's not, like, fast. I mean, the game doesn't do a bunch of crazy stuff, but still.
I think it kind of does. The game has some very novel visual effects. Yeah.
The visual effects, yeah, for sure. But
so not, I know, guess... So, like, who paid this guy's rent while he was making this game? That's what
I don't
question.
Know. Okay. Well, I guess Donkey... he made the game a lot before he signed on with Donkey. Like, he had, actually don't know how much he had. I haven't watched, like, there's a documentary, like, The Making of Animal Well. I haven't watched it, but okay. I assume that once he signed on, Donkey's company started paying his rent.
Yeah, you have to assume that Donkey's company financed the creation.
That's what
of the game
that's what it is, right?
That's what a publisher what it, is. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know when that started. I think he was probably just doing it in his free time before that.
Well, it's I think it's a really, really good game for Donkey's first I'm rooting for Big Mode. I think it's cool that there's, like, a new publisher with, like, a recognizable face behind it. And I do as much as I think Donkey's videos nowadays are, like, kind of lazy, I do think Donkey's tastes and my tastes in games line up quite well.
Yeah.
And Donkey,
yeah, that's
also
the whole thing. He's like, he wants Big Mode to be, like, very selective about what games they publish.
And he wants to publish these, like, kind of indie darlings, indie gems. And I really respect that, and I think that's cool. And I think that it's smart for him to be able to identify, like, a game like this doesn't cost that much to make in reality, right? You're paying two guys, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the big risk would be getting it in front of people. And Dunkey can just fix that risk because he's like a big,
he's a pretty popular guy
for the audience. So I don't know. I think that that's actually really interesting. And I think this game in particular is such a good first title for them because it's such a brave title in some ways. Like, it's a very unusual, unique game that absolutely would not have been published by anybody other than a pretty indie publishing shop, right? And so, I think it's kind of a statement that this is the first game from Big Mode.
So, yeah, the marketing. Okay, we're talking about Animal Well. We didn't even say, like, hey, we're talking about Animal Well. This is a game from Big Mode, the Dunkey publisher. And it is a Metroidvania. I don't know. Is that it? Metroidvania? Metroidbrania. Yeah,
it's a Metroidvania. It is an open well game, is open what it says here on the website. Yeah. Well, okay, wait. I want to say one more. Yeah, obviously, so Big Mode's the publisher. Big Phone is made by Dunkey Entertainment Solutions, whatever. Animal Well is their first game, and it's this open world, very experimental, very out there, very, like, ARG style.
Very ARG. Well, open world, I feel like, might have connotations that...
Yeah, no, it's not open world.
That's it's like a 2D... Actually, it's a platformer, 2D platformer.
It's a Metroidvania, yeah. It's a game where you can go most places from the start.
It's open-ended,
right? Undirected. It's undirected, maybe.
Yeah.
Its story is very... It's very cryptic all throughout. I finished the game and I was like, okay, I guess that's it. And Dylan informed me that there's actually like six more layers to the onion than I just like didn't even see because I just didn't grok it as that kind of game for whatever reason. And I think that's very cool and it's very experimental. What kind of pisses me off is like Dunkey is on record for every once in a while hating, like he doesn't like Death Stranding. And then his first game that he publishes is like this like weird, intricate game that makes no sense. And like, and like 90% of players aren't going to understand even a fraction of what's going on. And like Mima Dunkey's like, From Software games are too inaccessible. And it's like, go fuck
that's
yourself.
That's not
a little
okay.
Bit.
All right. I don't know. I got to stand up for Dunkey here. His main complaint about Death Stranding was not that it's like obscure. He made fun of the story being kind of nonsense and dumb, like with the lines about like, oh, I'm fragile, but I'm not that fragile, whatever. But the,
I'm kind of ribbing him, but like all of his critiques of Death Stranding, I'm pretty on board with.
Right. Like the fact that the gameplay is just walking and trying to not fall over with boxes on your backpack. And like, I remember his line of like, the main goal of Death Stranding is to build stuff that allows other players to not have to play the game Death Stranding, right? You build zip lines and stuff.
This is like my problem is there's a lot of games that you can boil down to like the main goal of the game is to not play it. Like most games are like that. Like,
oh, you want
to
win? What happens when you win? You just stop playing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and a lot of games have progression curves where it's like eventually it filters you out of having to play certain elements because that's pretty satisfying. Final Fantasy, it used to it was hard to kill certain guys and then you power up and then it's easy to kill them.
You don't like fighting?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of stupid. And then also, I do think it's really easy to reduce Death Stranding to like, the goal of Death Stranding is to walk from one place to another without falling down. It's telling that you haven't played Death Stranding, Dylan, because like, that's not what the game is. Like, it's a huge part of the game, but the game is actually about like when you're walking from place to place, there are these like eerie moments that are systemic and like that's really creepy. And yeah, a lot of it's walking, but also while you're walking, there's these breathtaking sights that are like artistic in a way that's baffling that no one's just copied it, like because it's so pretty. And I don't think I've played a game as pretty as Death Stranding 1, even on newer hardware. Like, I think Horizon Forbidden West is technically immensely impressive. I think Death Stranding 1 is the more beautiful game. And Death Stranding 1 is also a game that asks me to just engage with the natural beauty of its world in a way that Horizon, you just glide through the natural world, right? So like, yeah. All right, so now we're talking about Death Stranding.
All right, so just in time for Death Stranding 2 to come out.
But it does make me mad, though, because it's like he's clearly thoughtful about like what's special about games is sometimes very hard to be, like, shared with the world. And, like, that's why big publishers, like, always take safe bets. And so his perspective on some games kind of drives me mad because I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you know what? Here's my new... I'm going to die on this hill. I mean, I think grandstanding is the word I want to use here. I'm tired of people like you calling out reviewers for being inconsistent, all right? Humans don't have... Humans shouldn't be obligated to give, like, a coherent set of rules for when they like things and don't like things. Ultimately, things because you emotionally dislike them. Like, you can't really explain it. And then you come up with a reason and it makes you sound smart. But, yes, like, it doesn't totally really matter, right? It's like, I liked it. End
fine.
Of story.
That's fine. I think literally the stated job of a reviewer is to be consistent about things because your job is not to accurately portray your feelings. Your job is to create a level of inference for other people to, like, build reasonable expectations. And Dunkey actually talks about this in his
video. Where I don't think he's that good at it.
He thinks a reviewer who's consistently wrong is more valuable than a reviewer who's, like,
consistent,
like, who's, like, mixed, right?
Yeah.
Because a reviewer who's consistently wrong is like, okay, I'll just ignore what he says. And I totally agree with that. Yeah, I wouldn't call Dunkey a reviewer, probably.
He's not really. He's a comedian.
He's an entertainer. Yeah, he's a comedian. And the meta on YouTube at the time for Death Stranding absolutely was to make a video where you make fun of the game and you make fun of Hideo Kojima. Yeah. And you make fun of that the game is, like, kind of awkward in all these different ways. Like, totally. So I get it. And I respect it. Game respect game.
Yeah, but I don't know. I haven't played Death Stranding, but I have a sense that, like, the obscure parts of Animal Well are different than than what makes Death Stranding obscure. Like, it felt a lot more... I don't know.
Well, Death Stranding's not an ARG. Death Stranding is like looking at Hideo Kojima's scrawled notes.
It's trying to interpret,
on a whiteboard,
like, themes
and being
and
like,
shit,
"What
right?
the fuck?" Yeah, it's more like thematic.
Yeah, Animal Well is more like you're not trying to figure out, like, the rules of the universe that the game is in. You're just trying to, like, figure out secret, like, Easter eggs.
Yeah. Also, Death Stranding is sometimes. I don't know why we've decided that Death Stranding is the thing.
That's
that
the ultimate. It's the perfect game to compare to Animal Well, you know?
Yeah, it's quite a bad comparison, but Animal Well is cryptic. Maybe this is the right framing. Is Animal Well cryptic the same way that, like, Dark Souls lore is cryptic? In that, like, there's a sense of intentionality, but there's also a sense of, like, yeah, the people at From don't, like, have some explanation to this. They've just torn out a lot of the pages versus my sense with Animal Well is, like, the creator probably has, like, a pretty good sense of what's going on, and, like, and he certainly knows all the secrets and why they're there.
Yeah, I think it's as long as you make it clear that the secrets in Animal Well are not about, like, backstory.
They're not backstory.
And lore.
Yeah,
they're all about just, like, different things you can unlock, essentially.
Yeah. So I guess it's just...
It's similar in the way that, like, in those FromSoft games, you have a sense of a bunch of stuff that you don't understand just walking through the world. You're like, all right, this seems like something. I can't tell what it is. You have that same thing in Animal Well, too. You'll, like, walk into a room and you'll see, like, a mural on the background on the wall, and you'll be like, what does that mean? And it does mean something, and you can figure it out, but it's, like, often not very clear.
Yeah, and there's this trust that if you put in a lot of work, you would be able to figure out what it means.
Yes.
And that trust is the thing that I think Kojima has struggled to build.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things in these games where it's just like, sorry, I can dig into this for, like, a year and it will make, like, less sense.
I mean, it's the same with FromSoft games too, right? Like, the lore is all partial. Right? You can't actually, you look it up, sure, people have interpretations.
I think that there's a lot of trust in FromSoft that, like, there's a level of intentionality that if people dig in, the more they dig in, like, the more it will actually take shape. Versus, I think the critique of, like, Death Stranding, for example, is, like, people have kind of cross-referenced the rules of, like, the stated facts of the world. And it, like, it's like, no, I think we just need to stop here.
Oh. Because,
like, it's just, yeah, that's the answer is that, like, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
That sucks.
A little bit.
But yeah, Animal Well was always an ARG adjacent. Because, like, apparently leading up to the game, like, before even Big Mode started working with them, I think there were ARGs where, like, he would, like, Billy Bassett would have a video of himself talking about the game, and then in the background of the video would be his computer and the monitor was open and it's on a website, and like if you notice that and go to it, it'll reveal like a puzzle that you solve and it gets you some, you know, it's like that, that's always been it, and like, and
that's cool,
that's part of the game.
Yeah, there's a I wish the game somehow indicated to me that like the real fun of the game was this extra layer, because I just like I finished the game and I was like, okay, that was fine. And I, for whatever reason, just like nothing grabbed me enough to start digging into another layer. But it is cool that like I engaged with this game as a Metroidvania puzzle game, puzzle platformer. And it's a fine Metroidvania puzzle platformer with a really striking art style and audio soundscape. Like really, really striking and really good. And it's like $3 and 10 megabytes, you know? Yeah. So I came away happy with it. But I think that what this game actually, like, I think engaging with this game as a puzzle platformer is not, like, it's really a mystery game. And I think that if, like, I thought of it more as a mystery game, I would have had more fun.
Interesting. That's I just rewatched Dunkey's video where it's like the Animal Well is Out video, and he talks to Billy Basso. And I think he says that originally Animal Well was thought of to be more like a survival horror game, like when it was first being designed. And then
it
that
has
kind
the
of toned
horror
down a little bit.
Tag on, like.
Yeah, it has some elements of that where, like, there are jump scares with some animals. And it's a survival, you know, there's like limited resources where you only have like 3 firecrackers at a time. And you have to like, all you can do is run away.
The ghosts are scary. Like, I think I was frightened in a very abstract way. I don't think I was ever like frightened, but it's got some creepy imagery.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd give this to like a child and like expect them to have fun. There's mild peril.
Mild peril. Yeah. My favorite descriptor.
But survival horror, you would equate it to a survival horror before a puzzle platformer?
No. I'm just saying it maybe has elements of that, because that's how it was more towards that when it started. But no, I would describe it as a puzzle platformer that...
Okay.
Yeah, I think... I mean, you're supposed to engage with it first and foremost as a puzzle platformer, and then you can peel back the layers of the onion if you wish. And I think that's the really special thing about it.
That's the special thing about it, though. Like, I think as a puzzle platformer, it's like an 8 out of 10. As a mystery game, it's like...
You didn't do the mystery, so you can't really evaluate.
Well, I just get the sense that... Well, the other thing that I think is a little bit hard is, like... Okay, the mystery elements to this game are really, really difficult, right? They're difficult to even get started with, and...
No, there's layers. There's a first layer that's,
there are some layers.
Yeah.
That's true. But I'm trying to think through, like, would I even be satisfied doing the mystery elements? Because, like, I feel like they're so difficult that I would just be, like, looking them up and then just, like, doing them...
I think the reward you get is cool. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but like,
I've also just never played any ARG like in real life. So like maybe ARGs are just like kind of too opaque for me. You know, I never got into like Easter egg hunting in Destiny or whatever. I was always content with like the community doing that and then me following the steps, which makes me sound like a real hack. But like, a lot of other video games, when they have these mystery elements, like the Easter egg in Call of Duty Zombies, let's say. Every Zombies map in Call of Duty, if you don't know, Dylan, has an Easter egg. And I don't know why they chose that as the term. Really, it's like a very convoluted quest that you can do in the middle of the Zombies match. And they have these steps that are like baffling. Like, I have no idea how anybody figures them out. Because they're just like, go up to this valve in one area of the map and like click circle on it twice. There's like no feedback, but if you click circle on it twice, then it will do something on this other area of the map. And then like, it's crazy. And there's like this whole, it's exciting when a new map comes out. There's this whole race. There's a culture around it. And there's like all the YouTubers are live streaming, like just like ramming their heads against this map, trying to figure out the Easter egg for a long time. Right. And then they figure it out. To accomplish it, they nowadays all result in a boss fight at the end. And to accomplish it is still mechanically very engaging. Maybe what like didn't grab me about like hearing about this extra layer for Animal Well is like mechanically, like the fun of it seems to be solving it in Animal Well, not mechanically executing it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't figure everything out on my own. I figured out maybe a little bit, but I had to basically look everything up past layer, even like some of layer two, like we'll get into it, but executing it and like feeling like you're doing something that not that many other people are experiencing, like seeing the secret unfold. I don't, there's still joy there, even if like you follow the guide.
That's fair.
And just feeling like the there's so much mystery. I don't know. It's just the joy of solving a mystery. The same reason it's fun to like get the true ending in Returnal, even though you had to like look up how to do it and do it.
But the true ending of Returnal wasn't like a satisfaction of cracking the code. I mean, maybe it is a little bit.
Like, well, that one is more of a satisfaction about like skill.
But it's beating because you have to be good to be the game. Yeah, it's a skill expression. It just, I think...
it's a satisfaction from winning. That's what it is. It's just winning.
Yeah, that's true. Solving, I think no one has really cracked the code on how to build a great mystery game, especially in the age of the internet, where like people can just look it up and like people will just look it up. Like, I think Return of the Obra Dinn might have like cracked it in some ways. Like, there's a lot of problems with creating a great mystery video game, I think, just inherent in it. Like, one is like, how do you let the player input the solution without giving away the solution? That's like the classic Phoenix Wright problem, right? Or like L.A. Noir problem. And like Obra Dinn, I think in some ways kind of cracked that by like having the input be this like very broad kind of set of possibility spaces, right? And I'm trying to think, like, I think this game has cracked some element of that mystery thing of like, if you make the mystery so impossible, then like people have to work on it together. And I, maybe that experience was like truly remarkable for the people on Reddit who did it early on.
I think it probably was.
But like, what sucks is that that experience, like, you can't like spin up a Discord chat and be like, we're going to figure out. You could, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's hard to imagine that happening again. That being replicable.
Yeah,
unless for this, you make like, you have well to build too. Unless you make Animal Well too, yeah. Right? Yeah, that's it. I just think it's a really hard design problem, but I think it's really cool that people are still trying to crack it.
Yeah, there's a website called, I don't remember the full URL. It's like, has everything been found in animalwell.com or something? And it's just
quite the URL.
Yeah, it's great. And it returns just the string no. But then
who makes this website?
Like the Animal Well team.
Oh, okay, so the assumption is that Barry has is
Billy
is yeah
yeah Barry, it's like that it. Billy's like monitoring the Reddit, and like once he's like, oh, they figured out the last thing, gotta switch it to yes. I think that there's actually hidden text on the website that says like a longer explanation of like, we're not actually going to update this, so they're not doing that.
Great. So that's a bummer. I mean, I could see Animal Well also being the kind of thing that like he drops a patch that's like fixes some visual bugs and it adds like a whole nother layer to the game. Like, it's just cool that there's this thing that is existing that's like filled with mystery and possibility, and it's just made by a person. It feels like it's made by an eldritch monster, you know what I mean? Like, but it just comes from a person, but it feels unknowable, which is I think very impressive.
Okay, so the website actually says, it says no, but then if you click and scroll, you'll reveal that it's actually a longer set of paragraphs. It says, not in my wildest dreams that I ever think I'd have to update this website. And then it was like three paragraphs. It basically, he made it as a taunt, like, to just compel players to keep going forward. But then the response to the game was so overwhelming. Like, people just jumped and solved stuff. Like, there's stuff in the game that the creator never thought anyone would ever discover could be solved, that people solved within, like, a week.
Yeah, I remember that. He had, like, an interview where he was like, I thought this would take at least 3 years, and it took 3 days, because people are just insane on the internet. Like, the fact that you have to plug in a printer.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to talk about Metroidbrania?
Yeah, I do. This term? I don't know where this term came from, but I kind of like it. I've been watching a lot of Atrioc, right? I'm watching his playthrough of Hollow Knight because I'm getting back into Hollow Knight. And Atrioc is very outspoken.
You're sort of like a Charms-like
YouTuber. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, he was like, why do we call them Metroidvanias, right? We don't call first-person shooters Dooms-likes, right?
We used to. Wait, just to be clear, we used to literally call them Doom-likes.
Wait, really?
Yeah, no, that was the really term for a while. This is like how genre terms get invented, is they're eventually they're Doom-likes, and then people eventually, they were called Doom clones for a long time. Doom clones, wow. And then eventually people made ones that were like not really like Doom anymore.
Yeah.
And so they came up with a new term.
I feel like at this point Metroidvania is kind of entrenched in the jargon though. But he was basically saying like
kind of has become entrenched.
The only reason
Souls-like has also become entrenched, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's two really not great names. But he was like,
no.
The only reason we call them that is because Metroid and Castlevania are the only two good fucking games in this genre that anyone wants to play. So that's why they're called that. They're shitty games. Like, if they were good, we would have a bunch of them, and people call them, like, backtrackers or something.
Backtrackers would not be
that would be a, that's not very good marketing. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because like a Metroidvania implies a lot of structure to it. Like they're adventure games. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of a bad name because it's one of those classic things. And I think Souls-like is actually probably on its way out in some ways because people don't really call games Souls-like anymore. They say like it's a game with Souls-like elements, I hear like more often.
That. I mean, what even is a Souls-like? Like, just like where you
have those... you look at like Expedition 33. Obviously, Expedition 33 is not a Souls-like, but like it's pulling stuff from Souls. Like the super specific parry timings. Obviously, parry timings are not something Sekiro invented, but like I do think. Actually, this is on record. The guy who made Eclair Expedition, the game director, said he was playing Sekiro at the time, and he was like, "Oh, I should be able to parry attacks in Clair Obscur in the game I'm making." And
well, that doesn't make it Souls-like elements. Like Sekiro's not even a Souls-like in that regard.
But I think that like the checkpoint system in Clair Obscura is like reminiscent of the bonfire system in that like all your heals and stuff replenish. Yeah. Like, and you know, it's this tapestry of like the Souls-like system. The bonfire system is just like checkpoints, right? Which like they didn't invent. But I'm just trying to say, like, I do think that more and more games have Souls-like elements. I think Hollow Knight has Souls-like elements.
Yeah, it does.
You leave behind a little ghost.
Running.
Exactly. Yeah, you have corpse running. Exactly. So, and more games are folding together more and more these ideas that I think eventually, like, Souls-like might only mean, like, a third-person action game that's, like, brutally difficult.
Kazan? Was that the newest game? That's a Souls-like, right?
I think, like, Kazan and... but like Liza the more P. I play like Liza P, I think Liza P is like a Bloodborne like, right? Like, I think a game like Bloodborne and a game like Kazan are probably fair to call Souls like. Although the more I played Kazan, the more I felt like actually the combat model in this game is more like Sekiro, which honestly is like not very like Sekiro. Calling Sekiro a Souls like feels not quite right.
It's the most out there, yeah. I mean, because there's no different weapons to pick up or anything, right? Sekiro, you just have your sword. Kazan's
combo system felt more like a fighting game and more like Monster Hunter. So, like, I don't know. I mean,
we're running into the problem of, like, categorizing things is inherently impossible, right? Like, humans make a bunch of different shit, and then we're like, all right, let's put it all in boxes. It doesn't all fit.
My whole point with this was to say, I think Metroidvania games, like, most of them are just adventure games, right? Like,
well, usually they have, like, oh, you unlock the double jump at some point. Oh, there's it's 2D combat, you know? There's, like, tropes. It's just, like how many of the tropes does it have?
Is, like, the original Zelda a Metroidvania? Like,
no, because there's no platforming.
Yeah, but you get, like, in Zelda 2, there is platforming, and, like, you get items, and then you revisit earlier areas. I'm a little bit like, okay, it's a Metroidvania.
The core experience of Metroidvania is getting to a locked door and realizing you don't have the thing yet. Like, that's really what it's all about.
But that happens in Ocarina of Time.
Of Time?
Yeah.
Like what?
But we call that an adventure game. You literally get to the Temple of Time, and they're like, you don't have the three keys. You get to lock doors all the time.
Yeah, but those aren't tools. Those are key items.
You get to get to the bridge. The bridge is out, and you have to come back with Epona. The bridge is out later, and you have to come back with the hookshot.
All right, you know, fair. It just doesn't feel like the same structure, but I'm not going to argue with it. Metroidbrania, on the other hand, is just like, it's a Metroidvania in the same way that, you know.
So wait, is a Metroidbrania a combination of Metroid, Castlevania, and like WarioWare Brain, like Dr. Brain Academy from like the Nintendo DS? Yeah.
No, I think they just wanted to put the word brain in there to indicate that you need to, that it's just puzzles.
Yeah.
It's just puzzles, which, like, Metroidvanias can have puzzles. Like, I mean, I guess they don't have to. I mean,
I think they kind of often have, like, some.
Does
macro.
Hollow Knight have any puzzles?
It's a macro puzzle. Like, you have to navigate the world.
But
it's,
I'm like, talking about thing. Like, you get into a room and it's like, oh, this is a puzzle room. I got to solve this puzzle.
Does the word brain imply puzzle or cerebral effort?
Because, puzzle.
Like, if it implies just no.
Well, it's just, that's the closest word they could use that, like, fits neatly into the word Metroidvania. So, yeah, there's no combat. You don't have a sword. You don't have any sort of weapons.
I just think it should be called a puzzle adventure game. Like, I think that would be fine. I also don't think this game's a Metroidvania at all. Like, at all. There are so few situations where you get to a thing and you're like, I don't have the thing yet in this game. It's honestly much more structured like a Zelda game.
Yeah,
where you go
true.
Into an area, like, four dungeons, they give you an item, and then you have to, like, do a bunch of puzzles with the item.
It's a Zelda-like. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can call it. Maybe, I mean, so far there's only one game in the genre Metroidvania, so far it's, like, fine.
That's not true. Like, Kooky Kooky Adventure was, I like, I don't know if that's the name of it. It was about, like, a bird that could lay eggs, and it was
what a
I
weird bird.
I actually think, and also I think The Witness is kind of a Metroidvania of the mind. And I actually think those games are better Metroidvanias of the mind, if in the purest sense. Because in The Witness, once you beat The Witness, you can start a new playthrough of The Witness, go directly to the final puzzle, and solve it. But you cannot do that without solving all the other puzzles around the map of your first playthrough. Because at the end of each puzzle encounter, it shows you a puzzle that, like, you can figure out. That will, like, the solution to that puzzle will teach you some rule or some mechanic that will be, in, like, important in solving the final puzzle, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, so that's a real Metroidvania of the mind, because you're not unlocking upgrades. You're just, like, you're putting together stuff that once you put it all together, you'll be able to solve the final puzzles.
All right, and that's our review of The Witness.
Well, you said this is the only one in the genre. And then also you're like, genres don't exist, but this is the only one in the genre.
I already said, I'm on record as saying I'm allowed to be inconsistent.
Yeah, that's true.
So how are the puzzles in this game?
Good.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about the visual effects.
The puzzles are good. I don't remember a lot of them vividly. I think what's cool about this game is... I think it takes the same, it has the same energy in terms of puzzle design as Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom a little bit.
It does.
The puzzles in this game, they really don't care how you solve it. You can solve it systemically using, like, the tools that, like, the game gives you tools that they expect you to use in ways to break the puzzles.
Yeah, none of the tools are, like, as you would say, lock and key, where it's like, oh, this, like, makes ice blocks. So if you ever need ice blocks, use this. They're all, like, and you get them and you're like, what am I going to use this for?
And then and there's, slowly, like, tech with them, which that's, like, really cool. The same way that there's, like, tech with them in Breath of the Wild. I think it's really interesting. What are they? Can we list them? There's the bubble wand.
Well, I mean, this is spoilers. Wand.
We don't know.
The spoilers. Yeah, it's the B
wand. Well, the
bubble
wand's the first one, I think.
You can get any of them in any order, I think. Oh, okay. There's four base ones.
Well, like, you don't get a double jump in this game, but you get the bubble wand, and you learn eventually, you click that, like, oh, shit, I can use this to double jump.
Infinite jump, honestly.
And then later you learn, oh, shit, I can tech with this to actually infinite jump. And, like, that's really cool, I think.
Yeah, that's really
the creative. Slinky is like has these, like, really interesting things where you can break certain puzzles with the Slinky, or with the Slink.
It's called the Slink, yes, because Slinky is probably a registered trademark in the United
States. Oh, I just thought that all the the Frisbee. I just thought they Frisbee's all have disc. Like weird names. Yeah,
well, Frisbee is also a trademark, but yeah,
that's true.
Well, a lot of them are abbreviated. Like, the goal of the game is to get the four flames, but they're all different colors, but they're all just abbreviated. It's like the V flame is the violet flame, you know, the B flame is the blue flame. Yeah. In general, I don't have strong recollections of particular puzzles either, but I do, my memory is not, like, I don't have a memory of ever being, like, really frustrated with a puzzle or having to look something up and then being like, I never would have figured that out, right?
No.
You can kind of, like, muscle your way through them with your brain generally, and, like, it'll be sometimes unclear whether or not you have the thing or a thing that would help you solve it, but maybe you'll come back and like it'll just click differently and you'll be able to do it.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I would say that the puzzles are mostly designed around you having one of the tools, but if you get a little creative, and like sometimes the solution using just one of the tools is quite difficult. If you have multiple tools, you can generally combine them in a way that you can kind of skip one step of the puzzle, or like you can break one element of it that then you can solve it creatively. Yeah. So you can kind of like almost brute, like especially by the end of the game, I feel like you can kind of brute force a couple of the puzzles where it's like, oh, I just have so many tools that like this mechanic I know there's actually a solution for. I can just like drop my slinky in like the last. Yeah. I don't have to figure out the last shifting block. I can just use the slinky to figure that out. Or I can use the bubble to like whatever.
And most of the puzzles are optional in the sense that they just like unlock chests with optional items. Eggs are the main collectathon thing. Yeah. So like, but they're optional in that sense, but they're also
did
like,
did you
that
just
is
use another genre term, collectathon? You absolute fuck.
What's the problem?
So now this is a collectathon.
It's a collectathon.
Well, yeah. I thought it was a Metroidvania. Now it's a Metroidbrainathon.
It's a Metroidvania with collectathon elements, actually.
Yeah. It's a life sim, because you sort of like have lives.
You don't actually have lives. There's no
life
system.
You have three
health. That's not lives. That's health. That's HP.
I mean, just another word for life.
No, lives are how many times you can die. Fuck you.
Yeah.
All right. Spoiler warning. This is not going to be a very long.
Wait, but
isn't
there a live system? Because isn't there like a counter of how many times you've died in the game?
Oh, there is. One of the secrets is like.
So one of the secrets is like you have to do a bunch of shit without dying ever.
There's a room in the final dungeon with a section in it that become like it gets filled up with skulls. One skull for each time you die. And there's a section of it that is only accessible if there are no skulls there. So that means if you get to that room without dying, you get an item. And the item is just like a little trophy thing.
Is there another thing that like requires there being tons of skulls in that room?
Yes, there is. Because there's a bunch of vines hanging from the ceiling, so you can't like bubble jump up there. But if you die enough times, it'll form like a hill
like
that
a
you
little
can jump
mountain.
Up.
Yeah.
And that gets you
cool
the better
cell.
Bubble wand. Yeah.
Oh, sick. What's the better bubble wand?
It lets the base bubble wand only has one. It only has one bubble at a time. Yeah, you can just spew infinite bubbles.
It's sick.
There's a lot of little things like that. It'll be like, oh, I found this little nook of this room, and it has this little thing in it, and it's just like, oh, I wonder what this is. Oh, it looks like it does this. That's delightful in a fun way, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Is there an upgrade to all the puzzles?
No, only
just
that one.
The bubble one. Okay. I would also say that it's like Ocarina of Time because there's like a whistle that can teleport you places.
That's true. But yeah, wow. Yeah. I mean,
maybe the episode name is desperately trying to determine the genre of Animal Well.
We can't. Our pattern has been just that the name of the episode is the game.
Oh, that's so
right.
We can't break that pattern.
That our listeners
Maybe this will be a true Dunkey video, and that will name this video, this episode, Death Stranding 2 on the Beach. We just talk about a different game the whole time. I was so mad his Mario Kart World video that like he just like plays like Bugsy's Racing for like half of it. I was so pissed. I'm never letting
him
go.
You gotta love him. All right, can we call spoiler warning and go into... There's not a
well,
ton
I have
about.
One more. I All have right. one more element that so I can stuff. Discuss without a spoiler warning, which is that, like, man, oh man, like the visuals and audio of this game are like really technically impressive, and like they're not like it's not like technically impressive the way that Death Stranding is, or the way that Horizon Forbidden West is, or whatever.
It's all
or the
pixels,
way that Tears of the Kingdom
and
is.
It's all like 16
well,
bit.
All those other
right?
games are also
okay.
Just pixels,
okay.
But, like,
No, they're voxels.
No, it's not. This game isn't 16-bit. Like, it's really, really...
aren't the
like,
colors
the fog,
16-bit?
The, like, smoke... Oh, maybe the color space is. But, like, the smoke effects are, like, these really, really in-depth particle simulations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are,
the smoke looks
because
really
the
good.
Game has the game has so much headroom because its art style is so... Plain isn't the right word. It's so... Like, the footprint on the GPU
compressible,
is very small.
Yeah.
It's so compressible that... And I think it's really cool to like build a game where you're like, okay, I'm building a very, you know, simple art style because I can't draw, you know, full resolution textures for everything that I want to make, which is, I think, the conclusion that like a lot of indie games with stylized aesthetics reach, right? They're like, okay, well, obviously I'm not going to build a game that's in 3D and has all these detail, hyper-realistic detail, because that's just not in scope. But then they ship it on PS5 and they like don't take advantage of the fact that there's just a ridiculous amount of headroom. And I actually really like that this game's like, yeah, I have this super simple game running. I render one screen at a time. I can just render the most complicated particle effect on screen. And it's just like, yeah, because I just have this ridiculous amount of headroom on the GPU.
And I wait, and similarly, think he wrote the like physics simulation by himself?
I mean, he might like plug into a framework at that point, but like still, it's, that's cool. But like, there's lighting effects in this game that are ray traced is a buzzword. It just means, but like, there's lighting effects that are, yeah, there's
like refracted reflections and whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
that do like GI on those smoke effects. And it's like, that's really cool, actually. So it's actually one of the more like next gen games I've played in some ways, like, you know. The soundscape, I think, is also just like,
yeah, there's like not really a lot of music. Like, some rooms will have music in them, but it's like, most of the time you're in this game, it sounds like you're just sitting in a jungle. Like, there's just kind of...
But also a jungle in the bottom of a well. There's this echoey cavernousness to its soundscape that I think is really creepy as well. So I just wanted to call that out because that's not a spoiler.
It's true.
And it's rad.
It is rad. Thank you for calling that out.
You're welcome.
Can we blow the spoiler horn, please?
Yeah, dude. I'm choking on the spoiler horn right now.
All right. Blow it. Nice. All right. So this game is in a few layers. Let's go through layer one, which is... So in the video that I was talking about earlier with Donkey talking to Billy Basso, he explains that there are three layers. Layer one is like what we expect... He expects most players to enjoy the game as, which is... You know,
it rolls the credits at the end of layer one.
Yeah, yeah. It's the regular ending. And so... it goes like this. There's four main sections of the map that you can do in any order. At each one, there's a flame that you have to get and bring back to a central area.
You can't do it in any order. You can't do it like 1-1-1.
That's not an order of
2-2-2-3-3-3-4.
Learn what orderings are, dumbass.
Shit, you're right. Yeah. You can do it in any order. You bring the flames back to the... base of the well?
It's
the center of the well?
It's the center, I think. It's where there's like these statues. There's these four animal statues with little notches in them where you place a thing. Turns out you're supposed to put flames in there, one flame per statue. And once you do that, it unlocks the fifth area, and there's, you know, the final boss dungeon down there. For each of the four things, there's a key item that you get, which is like your Zelda item / you're like the thing to unlock a Metroidvania thing, but it doesn't really work like that. The first one you probably will get to is the ghost, which is Dogtown. Do you remember Dogtown?
I remember Dogtown. You think that's the first one that you get to?
That's the first one I found. It's like kind of you run into it kind of central. You just kind of go up and to the left and then you're there.
Oh, okay. Is that where you get the bubble wand?
No, bubble wand is like down the, left in...
down left, and it's like the squirty guy, right?
The seahorse. Like
it's a seahorse. Oh, you're right. That one you probably do second.
I mean, I don't know if there's any restriction on
I'm trying
the
to think.
You
do you
things.
Fight the ghost dog twice? You do, right? Because the first time you steal the disc from him, and then the second time you give him like the false disc. Right?
It's only one. So the boss fight, quote unquote, of this area is you stumble into this room with a like statue of a big dog, although there's some contention online about whether it's a dog or a cat. Because it kind of, you know...
The animals are all, like, weirdly vague of, like, is this a cat? Is this a dog?
Well, it's pixel art.
Like a terrifying monster ghost?
It's a ghost, but it's definitely a dog because, like, it's all... The whole rest of that area is dogs. But you basically... You take... It has this thing that says disc, and you click on it. And it's like, oh, now I have the disc. And then immediately a giant dog ghost will start chasing you. And if it touches you, you lose a health. And then you figure out that what you have to do, like you can put the disc back and it will stop chasing you. And you're like, all right, well, I got to figure out how to get this.
Oh, that's what I did. As I did that, I put the disc back and I was like, I'm not coming back here for a while.
Yeah, yeah. What you do is you explore more in this area and you find a plate, like a shrine. It says like M disc shrine. And you pick up this object called the M disc, which you surmise is called the mock disc. And then what you can do is take that and like swap them. You put the mock disc back on the disc shrine and then he'll like be like, all right, that's great. But then you get to keep the disc. And so that's your key item.
But later you do have to do the full dog chase, right? Where that, you have to lead him through the whole
dog. You have to do it while
town.
The dog is chasing you. Yeah. So you pick up the disc, you go to the mock disc shrine and you get the mock disc, and then you go back and put the mock disc back. And you have to do that all while he's chasing you. Because he chases you through all the different screens. And then that's basically the boss fight, is you have to avoid dying while
that
he's
one
doing
I think
that.
Was the, one of the hardest
that's
things.
That's tough. Yeah.
It took a really long time.
The dogs themselves are really annoying. You go into a room and there's a dog sitting there, you're like, hey doggy, and then it'll just chase you and start biting you. But then once you get the disc, you can throw the disc and the doggy will be distracted.
Dogs love frisbees.
That's their weakness. Yeah. And even that on its own is really creative, right? You're like, oh, how am I gonna fight this dog? Oh, you don't fight it, you know.
You just
think for yourself. What is a disc, the relationship between a disc and a dog? You can it's all stuff like that. That's dog. Is that all there is to say about it? I don't know. You get the V flame or something.
The disc is this cool. I mean, again, it's this cool thing where the disc, you'll initially be like, okay, I can hit switches that are far away with it.
Right. It travels straight and it bounces.
There's some obvious usages to it, but then you'll accidentally throw it and then jump and land on it, and then you'll travel along it. It will just
fly a little bit.
You can fly essentially. And so you learn and there's other weird quirks to it too, where you can knock it into a leaf and then it will fall down and it can land on the water or some bullshit. You know what I mean?
There's some really advanced tech with it where there's one optional challenge where you have to fly on it and then bounce off a wall, throw it again in midair, land on it again to fly up, to go back up another set. And there's spikes all throughout and you have to do that
you
four
can,
times
like,
in a row.
Work in the bubble wand or whatever. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I think actually though, Dylan, one thing that you're kind of misrepresenting in this list here, I just see how you have the boss and then the item you get. A lot of the time you get the item before the boss.
You always do. Yeah. I mean, I didn't,
which is very different than, traditional Metroidvanias. You get the item at the end, you kill the boss and then you get the item.
So really it's more like a Zelda game where you get it, the dungeon item.
Where you
item.
Get it and then you use it to take down the boss. Yeah. It's the dungeon item.
Although the disc one is a little different. I mean, the disc one is, you get the disc, but you can't really keep it until
you
beat the boss.
Although, for whatever reason, Dylan, I think you only have to do the chase, when you want to get the flame. I think, you get the mock disc and that gives you the disc. And then if you want to get the flame, you have to get the mock disc as well.
That might be it. Yeah, I don't really remember. But yeah, you beat the boss and it unlocks a room with the flame, and you have to use the disc to open the flame. The flames are in little glass balls. You have to
You have to use two discs, and so that implies, now I have to go back and actually steal the mock disc as well.
Something like that. I don't remember.
Whatever. All right. The bubble wand I want to skip to.
Okay.
That's in the bottom left. The bubble wand is you can blow bubbles with it. And initially, what is the initial thing that you think this can do?
You just hop on it. It just lets you jump a little higher. I think that's all.
It also lets you fall down.
Oh yeah,
safer.
You can
because
slowly
there's these
fall
tunnels
on it.
Where it's really hard to land where you need to land unless you just fall to your death. Unless you, it's not fall damage, but it's just that you'd fall so fast you wouldn't be able to react to where you need to land. And the bubble wand helps you do that.
Yeah, because you can fall. You can control the rate of your.
But descent. If you get it's kind of it's probably a couple frames that the timing. But you can chain hop the bubble wand and you can double jump and triple jump and quadruple jump and sextuple jump. It's crazy.
It's really, and you can shoot, you can blow a bubble straight down underneath you while you're on a bubble and then just go straight up. It's pretty nice.
I don't think I ever learned that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's pretty good. So this is mostly a traversal ability. You can't use it for interacting with stuff except for the eel pipes. You blow a bubble next to these little fish heads sticking out of walls.
Fish head pipes.
You blow a bubble, it'll open it and keep it in its mouth. You jump in and then it'll swallow you and it'll teleport you to another end of wherever the pipe goes. And it's like a fast travel thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a fast travel thing. I like the bubble wand a lot. I think it's probably the best, the most staple item in your toolkit. Because it's the double jump. But then also it's interesting that you, when do you get you're finding eggs throughout too, right?
Yeah.
Is that layer two?
Yeah, the egg, finding all the eggs is part of layer two.
Okay. 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 The other areas are the chameleon fight, which gives you the yo-yo. I found this fight very frustrating.
The chameleon fight is tough. Well, the seahorse, we should say the seahorse fight. It's just like you're in a big room and the seahorse is like blowing, like spewing water at you, and which can knock you into the water, which makes you lose a health. And your goal is just to press some switches. There's like four switches on the ceiling that you have to hit.
Well, you also have to like redirect the water spouts like on the little like. It's another situation where it's like, yeah, this guy's like he's like, fuck it, I'll just have fluid simulation in my game. It's very simple, but like, I don't know.
The water particles like bounce realistically off of this angled like, platform that you can change the angle of.
It uses like Sandfall style physics simulation for the water. Which is cool, but when the water hits other water in the basin, it's like light gets refracted against it, and there's like puddles form. It's like crazy.
I love Billy. Yeah, chameleon. This is in sort of the jungly looking area, and the yo-yo.
I hate the yo-yo.
What?
I don't like the yo-yo. I never really quite understood how to make the controls. For the yo-yo.
Oh, it's true. The yo-yo kind of flies out. Really clear what direction it goes.
It's very unclear to me. Like, you can walk the dog with it. Like, you can hit it against a wall, and then it will, like, crawl up the wall, kind of. But it always felt
it's a little finicky. Yeah.
Which maybe is, like, fitting for a yo-yo, but it was annoying often. Especially since there's some... Especially, like, at the end of the game, there's a couple of, like, rooms where you have to do a yo-yo thing very quickly. And it was really annoying when it, like, wouldn't work because...
I mean, get good, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm sure there's tricks to it, and I'm sure there's a video of someone, like, doing yo-yo tricks in this game.
Yeah, probably.
But I never figured it out.
I think I agree that it
controls,
like...
I didn't even know you could switch items with
shoulder
buttons.
Because there's no tutorial. It just says, like, press A or press B to jump at the very beginning. You jump out of your little hatchling thing.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah. Does it tell you how to open like the map?
I don't know.
I don't think it does. So it just trusts that you push all the buttons. And I think I pushed all the shoulder buttons when I was first learning the game and maybe when I got my first item, but I never revisited it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't learn that you can quickly switch between tools with the shoulder buttons. Yeah. I think it might tell you what button is opening the map because the map is a key item that you get after the tutorial room. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. The yo-yo maybe is the weakest of the four. It doesn't really feel like it's super unique because there's a few different items you can use to break breakable terrain. Yeah. Like there's spikes and like stalactites that you can break, and like you can do that with the frisbee. You can do that with the yo-yo, and there's a few other items that you can do that with as well. It's mostly for like buttons that you need to press that are kind of that you couldn't normally reach that are like around some twisty turns.
Yeah, it's the most, it's not lock and key, but it's the most lock and key, I would say, the core item set.
But it is cool that it's a yo-yo.
It's fun that it's a yo-yo. And then there's the slink, which is in the ostrich town. The slink is my favorite one just because it's a slinky, and it's fun the way a slinky's fun, which is like, if you put it on a staircase, it will slide, it will go all the way down the staircase. Yeah. And there's all sorts of puzzles where you put it on the staircase and then you have to like beat it before it hits the button.
Yeah. A lot of timing stuff where you're like racing the slinky.
It's super fun.
Yeah. And the slinky is a good example of where like you would get to a puzzle and be like, I have no idea what kind of item I would even need to solve this, and then you later get the slinky and you come back there and you're like, oh my god, this is a perfect fit. I just put it on the top of these stairs and it goes down and hit the button.
Yeah, it's very cute. And then you can also just use it as like a weight, which is like nice.
Yeah, just wait. If you need,
but it's an annoying weight in that like you can't, like if there's a button on a ledge you can't use it
because
you
know
what I mean? It's like, because it's not a weight, it's a slinky. And I think it's fun. I like how all the items are toys.
Yeah, there's some theory really that, cute. Like, the well, you're finding, like, the lost toys of someone who was lost there. I don't know if that's really how you're supposed to think about this game.
Seems dark. Yeah.
Especially because there's, no humans involved in the game at all.
Well, maybe one died.
Maybe, but then, like...
Why are their toys so small?
Right.
And who put them in chests?
Yeah, where'd all the chests go?
And then if you get all the flames, you bring them back to the center, and then you fight like this fucking demon.
Well, hold on. Yeah, it opens a pit in front of the statues, and you go to the final zone where there's like a puzzle that forces you to prove that you have all four of the items. And then you get the fifth item. There's like, you know, it's a dungeon, so it has an item. It's the lantern. And the lantern, you know, you can just turn it on and off, and it illuminates like a circle around you. And it interacts with a few different things. There's like some, there's some spikes in this game,
but
there's
zones.
There's also like ghosts that act as like lava, essentially, where you can't go through it. Like you'll take damage when you hit it. The ghosts will like be repelled or disappear in contact with the light. That's the main thing you use it for. There's also those like doves that travel back and forth to match your coordinate, you know, like to block you from going up and down in certain rooms. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
Those guys, those are like any ghost will be like repelled by the light, I think is generally how it works.
I see.
So you use that as well. And there's several puzzles. And then you get to a room where the manticore is sitting there and it's like real freaky looking and it has laser eyes and it's like kind of scary, maybe. Yeah,
dude, its laser eyes are so crazy.
Yeah.
It's a really fun encounter because you're constantly running because and it's not just like it's not like a Crash Bandicoot level where you're just running away. You have to like run around this
you have
like
to do maze, a puzzle.
And you have to do a puzzle while it's chasing you. And it's like a pretty complicated puzzle in that like each time you get to the new thing, you're like, what am I supposed to do here? And you don't really have time to think. And then to execute, it's also like it's testing your platforming skills and you're testing your yo-yo skills and all that kind of stuff. It's very stressful. It's very fun. And then also, like, the Manticore doesn't just chase you. It also has this laser beam eye attack that's, like, so extra.
Yeah, it's like it's like Godzilla.
The violence of it. Yeah, like, yeah. And there's nothing else in the game that's, like, bit. Like, I mentioned the chameleon's, like, kind of a hard fight. The chameleon just, like, kind of lobs his tongue at you, right?
He like, eats you, or he, like, shoots blobs. He, like, shoots blood from his eyes. That's what chameleons do.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not obvious that it's blood. It's just, it's not very violent.
It's not particularly violent, and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, this animal is like kind of pissed with me. The manticore is like wishes to delete me from the universe. Yeah. Yeah. And then you figure out eventually like you can actually use the laser in the puzzle to like hit certain switches and break certain objects to like, yeah, it's very fun, I think. And it's stressful. It feels pretty satisfying when you beat it.
You get through the puzzle. You have, there's like a little bit of a chase where you're running away from it trying to dodge laser, and then you fall down this pit and you press on a little TNT switch. Like throughout the game there have been moments where you like on a switch and it blows up a wall with like really cool smoke effects. It just does that, but it blows up the manticore, and then fireworks come on and it says Animal Well, created by Billy Basso.
Don't you see the house and stuff too?
Yeah, after there's like a little cutscene-ish thing where like it rolls like the little credit thing. And then you walk to
the right. It's not very long. The credits are like...
It's literally...
made by Billy Basso, published by Big Mode. Thanks for playing.
Dan Adelman, yeah. Yeah. That's it. And then you go to the right and you get into the house. And yeah, this is where it starts being like, hold on. Maybe there's more to this game. Yeah, there's like a little... There's a TV that you can like turn on, I think. There's a couch. It's all sized appropriately for you, though. And you're not a human, so... there's like an office that you can't get into. Mm-hmm. And there's a closet.
You get the remote, I think, right?
No, don't get the remote. You get the F-Pack, which is like the extra. You can now carry 6 firecrackers instead of 3. Oh, I guess the firecrackers are also an item we forgot. That's like the one you get in the tutorial
area.
You
get it right away, yeah.
Yeah, and they just kind of scare animals away or light up rooms temporarily. And then you can go out of the house, keep walking to the right, and you'll see a big floating donut. You remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're kind of like, what the fuck? There's nothing to do with it. You can just keep walking. And the next room, I think, I don't know what the order, but one of the rooms has like a big cuckoo clock. Mm-hmm. With like,
that's like the speedrunner time board.
It's not clear right away, but yeah, it'll be like, there's doors that close.
It was clear to me right away. It was clear to me right away.
Well, you're just a little bit more of a gamer, I guess.
I played Dead Cells. This is like a thing in Dead Cells.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then there's a teleporter to the top of the well?
No, it's not a teleporter. It's just like a well. If you look at the map at this point, you're at like the very bottom.
You're at the bottom.
You can jump into what looks like a well, and then you'll wrap around and hit the top.
Oh,
so
you'll
fall
down. Right.
Like, so the whole, it reveals that through. The whole map wraps vertically and horizontally.
It's a portal.
Yeah.
Oh, it wraps horizontally.
It does.
As well.
Yeah, there's a few times where you can see that, I believe, where like
weird.
Yeah, but you know what? We're gonna get into it. If you take a piece of paper and you connect its top and bottom and then also connect its sides, do you know what shape you get?
A donut?
Yeah.
What do you mean you connect its sides?
Well, like, okay.
How do you topologically do this?
The only way to do that would be a sphere. Stretch.
Would be a sphere.
So you imagine you have a piece of paper and then you fold.
I don't have to imagine it. I have a piece of paper.
Take a piece of paper right now.
Okay. All right. Let me get it. Okay.
You said you had it. I don't know. Feels like you don't get it. If you have to get it, then do you really have it?
Well, now I have it. Should I rip it?
Not until I see it. Okay, don't rip it. Okay. Take the top. Decide two opposite sides that are the top and bottom.
Okay. I'm going to do it wide angle.
All right. Now connect them with a piece of tape.
Okay. Do I need to top and bottom?
Yeah. And now what?
Connect them with a piece of tape. I'll have to fold it.
Fold? No, you'll end up with a tube. Like, come on.
So I need tape too?
All right. Well, I don't know. Do you have any other way to fasten?
I need to fasten it. Okay. Then I'll use. Okay.
What are you going to fasten it with if not tape?
A paper clip.
Oh. I guess that's a fastener. Yeah.
Well, it's a clip for paper. That's why they call it a paper clip. And audience, you can do this at home if you want.
So Charlie's here. He's done this before. He's got a really nice paper clip set up, but this could work with a stapler, tape, even glue.
Any fastener.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe a pipe cleaner. Probably not. That'd be hard. I'm noticing it's taking you quite a while to fasten this
Well,
paper.
I'll be honest, it was pretty difficult to realize how I'm supposed to use a paper clip to
Okay.
So now I have a tube.
It's a tube, right? Exactly. So now if I ask you, from the side. Here's step two, believe it or not. There's actually two steps to this process.
So there's two layers to this process.
If you will. So I need you to give names to each of the two ends of the tube. Can you do that?
Okay. Can I left and right? Is that
those
fine?
Are great, as long as you know which one refers to which end.
Okay, I'm gonna write on it.
That's fine. Great.
Like, no, don't write.
Don't write that. You're ruining it.
Okay, left and right.
All right, I've so now, it. I guess that was step two. Step three is you have to connect left to right.
How on earth could I do that?
So I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but you need to use stretch paper.
I don't have that.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I'm connecting the two halves of. I'm not connecting the two sides of the paper. I'm connecting the two ends of the tube.
Those are the sides of the paper.
Oh, well, no. You asked me to. No, those aren't the sides of the paper. Those are the edges of the paper.
What the fuck is the difference?
The edges of the paper have now in a dimension unknown to the paper, only known to me, right?
Right.
The paper doesn't know it can be folded at all.
The paper doesn't know anything.
Okay. Well, like, what
you're saying,
I mean
yeah,
is
you're,
I'm
you're
not...
thinking in three dimensions and the paper exists in two is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And so now I need to think in four dimensions, right?
No.
No, it's still three
still
dimensions. Okay. I get where this is going. Yeah.
It turns into a donut, right?
And if I had stretch paper... I don't really need stretch paper.
It's just not going to look like a very good donut.
But yeah, it's like a big thick onion ring.
Yeah. So that, if you left that connected like that, that is the topology of the world of Animal Well.
Oh, right. Because yeah, that's true. Okay. You're right. You're totally right. So also the topology of the world of Pac-Man is a donut.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we exist in a donut? Our universe?
Well, our universe is in higher, we have three spatial dimensions.
Yeah, but is it a donut? Like, is it a hyperspace donut?
A hyper donut?
This is so cool. That's okay. All right. I like this game again. Like, that's like a cool thing.
See?
So the donut represents the whole world?
Yeah.
And then, so wait, Dylan, real quick, can I eat this?
yeah. Well, since it's not stretch paper, it's actually made of like, nutrients.
So what should I do with this? I'm going to put this by my desk as a token.
A token of this conversation.
The memory we share.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, can I put the paper away?
Yeah.
And the paper clips?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Thanks for asking.
All right, thanks.
So yeah, perfect. The donut that you see in the game after the house is sort of a little... I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, I have no fucking idea what this is, but it must mean there's something big to discover. It was kind of, it gave me that Returnal feeling of like, oh boy, here we go.
Well, because it's also a three-dimensional asset, right?
Which, no other assets are three-dimensional. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. But it turns out that it'll become clear what the donut's for after you do true ending.
It's not just what I just did? It's not just for arts and crafts?
It's not just for arts and crafts, strangely enough. Yeah.
Okay. Incredible.
So along, you know, playing the base game, you will encounter two other main types of things that don't actually affect your ability to get to the credits. One of them is eggs. They're called secret eggs. They're just some of the chests that you'll find have eggs in them. And it'll be like, every egg has a name. You know, this one is called Gorgeous Egg. This one is called, like, Colorful
Egg. Big Egg.
Big, yeah. They're just, they all have.
How many more? Names. All right. Let's think. Let's come up with 50 names? Egg names, right?
Well, there's 64 I'll total. Start.
I'll get a, okay, well, I'll get a counter going, and let's see if we can do this, right?
What, ready? Naming all the eggs or just coming up with new
eggs? Just coming up with, we're going to see if we can come up with 60 good egg names, okay? So we did Big and we did Gorgeous, right?
Gorgeous is from the game.
Well, it can be from the game.
Okay.
It can be from the game. Okay, do I, counter.com? Is that like a thing?
Well, I thought you were bringing up a counter on your phone, but what were you doing?
It turns out I don't have one.
You thought you had a counter app? What's the app? You just press a button and it increases the number?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping. Online.
You thought,
online
I feel like I would know if counter. I had that app.
Huh? Well, no, I just thought I could use the calculator and press equals a bunch of times, but for some reason it doesn't do that. So I'm on simplecounter.app, and it's shocking the amount of loading animations I'm being given.
Like, literally, you could build this app in, like, 2 seconds.
Beautiful egg, right?
Yeah. So we're alternating?
Vibrant egg. That was my first one. All right, now you go.
Normal egg.
Normal egg. Big egg.
Okay. Green egg.
Small egg.
Magic egg.
Striped egg.
All right, quick intermission. Is this good content?
This is really good content.
Okay.
Good egg. There it is.
Oh, awesome. Hairy egg.
Okay. So let me hit you with this. Teensy egg.
So you're just going all size, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. Think about how many color words there are. Magenta egg.
That's a good one. Ostrich egg. Would that be allowed? You think you could find one that's ostrich egg in this game?
I don't think that's in the game, but I think you.
Okay. All right. That's
it's a type of egg, right?
Because we don't know eggs. Yet.
Are you counting, by the way?
Yeah, I'm on. Yeah, we're on 13.
Oh, we're almost there. Upside down egg.
That's good.
That's from the game.
So it's not really a property of the egg. It's a property of, like, how about this? Found egg.
All right. I got one. The egg.
The egg. A egg.
Oh, okay.
Oh, would it be A or N egg?
N.
Well, that's another one. N egg. All right, 18.
One of them is grammatical. One of them is not.
Ungrammatical egg.
Okay.
There we go.
Anti-egg.
Anti-egg. New egg.
Okay.
Is an anti-egg a chicken, or is it like me because I eat eggs?
An anti-egg is an egg is like an antimatter egg. So if it comes into contact with a regular ant, it'll annihilate. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Unusual egg.
Is that the property of antimatter? Also, does antimatter exist?
Yeah, it does. But it doesn't work like if you have an antimatter object, it will like sense what object it's touching, and if it's the same type of object but regular in matter, it'll annihilate, right? It's not like I have a regular basketball and an antimatter basketball, and if I manage to like touch them together, they both explode. It's like
you're
on the level
not
of
how
like
it works?
That's not how it works.
No. Any antimatter, I assume, coming into the thing.
It's about the type of particle it is.
You can't.
Right?
You can't have an anti basketball. You can have you can have antimatter, and you can have matter.
Yeah, it's just about the direction of the spin of the. It doesn't matter. Are we talking about
spin?
Particles have spin. You don't know that?
Bouncy egg.
Bouncy egg is great. Robot egg.
Okay. Two eggs.
No, that doesn't count.
One doesn't count.
You can do
silly egg.
Okay. Bonus egg.
Goose egg.
I'm just about to think 12 eggs, but that also, no, that doesn't work. Don't write that down.
I didn't. I'm not writing any of them down.
Okay, good.
The counter.
That would be a big waste of time.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like I'm out of eggs. Shit. How many are we at?
27.
Oh man, this is such a bad podcast.
Well, I mean, you're the one making it slow. I'm pretty egg timer.
No, that doesn't end in. That's a timer, not an egg.
Well, okay. Okay. Like, I mean, agree to disagree, frankly. Digital egg.
All right. Portable egg.
Potable egg.
Oh, an egg that you can drink. Okay. Immovable egg, sort of an opposite of a portable egg.
Sick egg. Or like diseased egg.
Oh, okay.
I have a good one coming up.
Oh, shit. Easter egg.
Shiny egg.
That's not that good.
Easter egg was really good. Why are you so slow at this? It's like,
because I want them to be good, all right?
Go back to colors, dude. That was a
pretty, but that's boring.
That was
that's fucking
that
boring.
Was a fruitful well. What's boring is this whole segment. If you just listed colors, we'd be done with it.
Yeah, but I want to try to make it as good as possible, you know?
But it's secure more boring egg. To listen. It's more boring to listen to you go,
that's probably
and then
true.
And then your big then the big thing that we were waiting for was secure egg.
Listeners are gonna be like, yes, that was so good.
Baby egg.
Adult egg.
Embryonic egg.
Unborn egg.
Fertilized egg.
Souls like egg.
That's good. Metroid
egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of that one. Wet egg.
Ooh, wet egg is really strong. Sunny side up egg.
Oh, scrambled egg.
Hard boiled egg.
Deviled egg.
We're almost there. Angeled egg.
Oh, I don't know any other types.
We're
of
at 51.
Ways to prepare what's eggs. Broken egg.
Oh, that's good. Steel egg.
Whoa.
Yeah. How many are there? Are there 55?
There's 64.
Oh my god.
Male egg.
Gender nonconforming egg.
Oh. Assigned female at birth egg. At hatched.
Wait. Okay. The egg was hatched?
The egg. No, sorry.
How about this?
Laid.
How about this?
At laid.
How about this? At laid. How about this? Unlaid egg. So it's like a chicken.
You already said unborn egg, didn't you?
No, but this is unlaid.
That's the same. Eggs aren't born. They're laid.
Oh, my God. Still inside the chicken egg. How All about right. that?
Pedantic egg.
This one came first, egg.
No.
Okay, all right. This egg, how about that?
All right.
This egg's pretty good.
Favorite egg.
My egg.
Our egg.
His egg. All right, this is the last one. This one's got to be really
oh,
good.
Oh, man. Dick egg.
I'm disappointed, but yeah, I can't go back. The counter's been pressed.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that was pretty
good. All right.
Should we cut all that, or?
No, that was really good. That was really good stuff.
It's my discretion. Anyway, so you've been finding eggs.
You found all 64 eggs.
Well.
Listen, it's not going to be that long in an episode, so I had
to
figure
out a way
to
pad it out.
Sort
yeah.
of,
yeah. We got to find some place to add shit. Yeah, so these eggs are usually. Some of them you just find, but a lot of them are behind like little puzzles. Some of them are pretty darn hard to find, actually. I think I found like 54 of them on my own.
Which 54 of the ones that we just named did you find?
Jeez.
Here's my goal. I'm going to try to make a lot of references to the fact that we did that egg segment.
So that I can't cut it out.
You can't cut it.
God damn it.
Yes.
I mean, my last ditch resort would just be not releasing the episode. It's a good way to do it. But yeah, I had to look up like finding all the eggs. So there's a room where all the eggs show. Every time you find a new egg, it'll show up in this room. And as you unlock different amount, like once you get 8 eggs, you get the flute, which is another key item that lets you just, it's not really immediately clear what it's for, but it actually has a lot of uses.
You can play little songs.
You can play little songs.
It's cute to play songs, but it turns out it's a whole fucking.
It's a device for
there's all sorts of
arbitrary information to solve puzzles.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You can teleport with it.
Arbitrary byte sequences into the game. And,
yeah. And that's like the first. And then the rest of the things you get by like there's a reward at 8, 16, 32, and 64. There's like the 16 reward is a pen that you can use to draw on your map, which seems...
Which I used exclusively to put helpful information on my...
You can just like write notes to yourself in English. Yeah, it's kind of fun. I think you also, I don't remember when, but you get stamps. It just has the Hollow Knight stamp system, but they're like little symbols, which is nice. Because you can assign meaning to them. And then...
Well, if only if you want.
If you want to.
You can also assign no meaning to them, and you can just use them to decorate your map if you want.
You can just use them to decorate, yeah. I don't remember what the other rewards are. Well, then when you get 64, it... I think that gives you... I don't... There's like a different... I'm not going to remember the exact details, but at some point you get, I think, the UV light, which is another key item that like you flick it on and it like... It reveals information in the background graphics, basically, sometimes, if there's
hidden messages. Whoa, that's cool. When do you get the remote?
That's one of three items that you get by getting certain medals. So that's in like a... I would talk about that next. Like, it's unrelated to
medals
the egg
thing.
Medals
is not a thing I knew was a...
You didn't get any medals?
What's the... No. What's a... you get the eggs and you also light these candles, right?
The candles is another separate system, yeah. So, okay, but yeah, you'll stumble upon those pretty regularly. You'll definitely find candles and you'll find matches.
Matches are shockingly rare.
Yeah, there's nine candles around the map and there's nine matches. Okay. And you can hold up to, you know, you can hold as many matches as you want, but as soon as you find a candle, you can use a match to light it, and then that match is consumed. And
so
the,
far, so good.
The matches, when you light a candle, I think it, like, wards off ghosts that are in that room
if
there are
any.
Yeah,
there's, like, a... I thought that was the whole mechanic.
Yeah.
And so I saved my matches for... There were, like, areas that were particularly hard to navigate if there was a ghost in it. Yeah. So I saved my matches.
Oh, no, I remember. So... if you light all the candles, it unlock the UV light. That's where you get the UV light. It makes more sense. I think for getting all the eggs, you get the top, the spinning top.
Yes, the spinning top.
Which is another item that you can use to breakable stuff. But it also lets you, like, there are certain parts of the ground that, like, looks breakable if you know where to look. Like, the pixels are a little alternating. You can spin the top and it will
downwards.
Dig.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can unlock new stuff. But once you get all 64 eggs and you have the flute, of course, and you use the UV light on it, it will reveal that each egg has like a pattern, like it indicates a number in binary. So every egg...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they have like three stripes that it can either be illuminated or not. So every egg represents a number from 0 to 7, and you shift those up by one. Or those represent... There's 8 notes to play on the flute, and so each egg represents a note.
Oh my God.
And so if you play the song... That's
denoted by all 64 eggs.
All 64 eggs in arranged as they are.
Song.
Yeah, and
holy shit.
Then if you play it as it's described on screen, you'll actually won't do anything, because what you have to realize is that one of the eggs is the upside down egg. That one is actually upside down. You have to flip that mentally, change the note. It'll make more sense because the song will sound wrong if you play the note wrong.
That's so funny.
You play that, and that unlocks a special door that contains a new egg called the 65th egg. Which is actually a key item that does it just shows
wait,
up.
Wait, so I got to open up the counter again.
65th egg, yeah.
There you go. 65th egg is a good description.
Yeah,
part, actually.
And then the final piece of layer 2.
Do peacocks lay eggs? Because it's in the peacock.
Yeah, the peacock
room, right?
Is behind all the eggs. They're birds, right? They got it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure.
Sure. So what does collecting all the eggs give you? It just gives you the 65th egg, and you're like, fuck yeah.
It lets you get the 65th egg in the top.
Is there a note? Is there a music note on the 65th egg?
No, the 65th egg does not show up on the like rack of all the eggs. It's just a key item that you'll need to use. Before you can get the true ending, the last thing you need to do is all the medals. So there's like, you might remember there's like little statues that say, they just have like little statues of animals.
Something?
There's one of them that has a kangaroo on it. There's a statue.
Yeah, I remember seeing a couple of statues of animals and being confused with what those are.
So in order to activate those, you need to get the corresponding medal. I don't remember how there's three. There's the kangaroo one, the eel one, and something else. The snake one, the snake medal.
Sure.
Each one of those is like a separate little thing. Like the kangaroo medal, you have to find, like the kangaroo will sometimes jump into the screen you're on. And if you scare him with the firecracker, he will like drop the K medal and run away, as you can pick that up. And
maybe I did get that.
Yeah, you might have gotten that one. And basically there's three more tools to get. There's the B ball, which is one you get from the kangaroo medal. That's the bouncy ball, which you throw and it will bounce all over the place. and destroy. It's the only thing that can destroy these certain kinds of blocks. It's like Brick Breaker. There's certain rooms that have like Brick Breaker blocks in them. You can destroy those.
Sick.
And then the S metal is the one that gives you the remote. So you end up having to play Snake because there's this little snake that chases you, and you have to use it to you have to lure it around and jump on it to get up to this thing that gets you the remote. And the remote is really handy because it lets you remotely activate switches that you normally need to go over and click on.
And hit, yeah.
And that can be useful for doing
certain
puzzles.
Doesn't it also activate the TV in the house?
It does, yeah, okay. Yeah, which is useful for something else. And then the final tool is, the E metal. I don't remember where the E metal gets you because I just can't remember everything. Damn it.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, please
keep
do.
Going.
But yeah, basically you need to get all of the tools. And then what you do is you go and do the regular ending again. But instead of going
in... UV lantern is the E metal.
Oh, okay.
So...
Wait, what? Then what do you get for getting all... what do you get for getting the candles?
I'm looking up that now.
There's all these different things to unlock, and it's very hard for me to keep track of which one unlocks which thing.
It's okay.
I mean, we also played this game last year, right? It came out
You keep going. I'm figuring it out.
Yeah, yeah. So while you're in the puzzle room with the Manticore chasing you... Oh, the wheel. The wheel is the last item to get. No, that's actually not from a metal, I don't think. There's a there's like a hamster wheel you can get. And that lets you walk on top of spikes and stuff. It's really fun.
Sick.
So yeah, if you get all the items and you go to the Manticore zone, there's another...
The wheel's obtained from freeing the cats in cages.
That's right. There's a bobcat puzzle where there's cats in cages and you can free them by playing a certain song.
Nice.
So we still don't know what the E metal... No, we still don't know what the candles
the
do.
The UV lantern is... You do... Oh. Wait, the UV lantern... The UV lantern is, yeah, you have to light all nine candles.
Okay, then what's the
E metal? So I guess, I think the E metal maybe was a lie that was.
Yeah, that sounds like a lie.
I think it was an AI-generated lie.
Ah, yeah. Oh, Gemini totally lied to me. It wasn't Gemini. I asked in Hollow Knight, what triggers the dreamers showing up on your map? And Google was like, the dreamers do not show up on the map because they exist within the dream realm. I'm like, fuck, that's not what that means.
Yeah, no, they're on the
map. It's like, no, you go to, it's when you get to the resting grounds. That's it. Like, anyway, there's, you use your new tools and you can unlock a new room that you'll be safe from the Manticore, but you have to use all of these different tools. You have to use everything at some point to get through. And then there will be a place, like an item called, or like a little thing on the level called incubator. And you can get here before you get all things, but you put the 65th egg in there. And then you do something else, and then a second Manticore hatches. And then you go to this little flute. You know, there's those statues that have the flutes.
Bad news.
Well, the thing, you play the flute next to this little flute thingy. And then the Manticore will become docile and you can jump in its mouth. And then
naturally, it
teleports you. It the screen goes all warbly and you end up in a new realm where you are controlling the Manticore and you're flying around space. And eventually you land on this little island that has a bunch of statues of bunnies on it. And that is that's the true ending. So you
do the credits play again?
I believe so. And then in the middle of that island with the bunnies on it is another floating donut. And if you interact with that, it teleports you back to the donut by the house.
To the first.
So donut, it lets you warp between the two realms. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's layer two, is you need to do all the main stuff that is sort of presented to you in the game.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And that's
you did that?
I did that, yeah.
Nice. Good work.
Yeah. And there's three more layers.
Wow. All right, so the bunnies layer is hinted at here, which is that there are these bunnies throughout the map, and they're on the title card, right? They're on the title screen.
Yeah,
as well.
Bunnies are a big part of the images. Yeah, I think that.
And whenever you see one, they run away. And my understanding is that bunnies... So I would say that the things that you just described are puzzle game level kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The bunnies is when we start getting into ARG kind of space, right? Yeah, okay. what happens if you collect all the bunnies? So, like, give me some examples of bunnies, and then what happens if you collect
them? Yeah, yeah. So,
what does it mean to collect a bunny? Or do you just find them, and then you note to
them?
You
collect them, I guess. You, the hard part of it is, well, okay, there's one bunny that you'll definitely see because it's in the tutorial area. It's just in an, it's like on, you can't get to it, but you can see it on the screen.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And you can actually get to that one fairly easily by going around through the, like, seahorse level and going up through a hidden hole in a wall, and you can just run up and get. You just click on it, and then it'll run away, and that counts as getting it. So that's really easy. But a lot of the other ones, let's see. There's one that's there's a duck out in front of the entrance to the jungle, just sitting there. And then another part in the jungle, there's a room that where the back of the room has, like, that optical illusion where it's, like, duck or bunny head. Do you know that optical illusion?
Sure.
It has that on it, and next to it is, like, a little coded message. And it turns out that that coded message, if you can learn to interpret the code, because, like, in the egg room, it where you get the flute, it shows you little faces that all line up one to one with a note of the flute. So basically, you play a certain song, you play the song that's indicated there next to the duck, it will turn into a bunny, and then you can click on it and collect it. That's one. Some of them are a lot harder. I don't think I figured out any of them on my... I got the one on my own, maybe just that first one I described. But there's 16 to get, I believe.
There's 16 of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Secret bunnies.
Yeah, you can just... Some of them get nuts. The coolest one is maybe the one that literally no one could solve on their own, because to solve it, you need to... put together sort of, you need to draw a picture where every individual download of the game only has a 50th of the solution. And so you need to get 50 people with different copies of the game to come together and say, here's what my game has in it. Here's the piece. And then everyone works together to put together the pieces.
That's awesome.
And Billy Basso contributed his piece as well during the, like, it was on Discord. I mean, I wasn't involved at this time. I'm just reading the history, but, you put together the puzzle, and then there's like a little thing in the game where you can, like, draw, you can, like, change what the background is. There's like a, it's like a big screen, like a big TV screen that you can control. Mm-hmm. Like, you can set each pixel. And if you set it to a certain drawing, it's a drawing of a bunny, and a door will appear with a bunny in it, and you can go collect it.
Yeah, it says here, one room to the right from the mallard, just before the start of the ostrich area, there's a wall mural of a bunny on a pixel display. If you continue through the secret passage to the room below, you will find one of 50 unique puzzle pieces. The puzzle piece is different for every player. After finding all 50 pieces and solving the puzzle, you can then paint it on the wall using the control panel. I don't quite understand how you... So everybody who solves this needs to get 50 players, or there are 50 puzzle pieces?
There are 50 puzzle pieces total. So when every build of the game has, like, a randomly selected of the one of the 50
pieces. One of the 50. Yeah. So I can go onto Reddit and find all the pieces at this point.
Yeah, you can find that. Well, even all the pieces isn't the solution, because you have to arrange them into a coherent image. Sure, but people have done this. Okay. Yeah, and then that's a bunny. One of them is just, like, a really difficult platforming challenge, I think. Some of them are, like, really, really difficult. One of them, the one you mentioned, is the printing one. So you can eventually get a key to the office. I think that might maybe actually be what the eggs... I don't know. At some point, you get the office key. You can go in there. There's a computer in there with a printer on it, and, like, a chalkboard with some strange writing that we'll get to. But I believe if you just are playing on PC and you in the game notices that you have a printer plugged in.
Yeah, here it is. Are you ready?
Yeah.
In the peacock room, examine all 64 eggs with the UV lantern and discover a secret song. Okay.
That gets you the office key, right?
You get the office key, yeah. Which then lets you unlock the locked door in the house. In that room, there is a computer. By interacting with it, if and only if you have a printer connected to your computer, it prints out instructions for an origami bunny. By folding the paper, you will get the code.
Yeah.
Play the song in the office that will spawn the same bunny.
Yeah, you have to print out a print. And there's a backup version of it. If you're not playing on PC, or if you don't have a printer, there's a different room where there's grass that is actually a barcode. Like, the pixels of the grass are a barcode. You can take your phone and scan it, and it will tell you the song to play. And then it will open the door with the bunny. Yeah. What are some other cool ones?
What are the figurines in Animal Realm? Well,
those are just like little optional items that you get for doing certain things.
They're like little win cons. Cute.
Yeah. So there's 16 of these.
The spike bunny in the dog area. There's a secret passage that leads to a room with spikes.
I don't remember that.
It seems like it's just really, really hard platforming with the frisbee.
Oh, that one's where you have to like be really good at the frisbee jumping.
Oh, there's one where you have to pick up the mock disc and you have to do a chase with the ghost dog through the entire map.
What? I don't remember that.
It says here, pick up the mock disc and go to the room with the bear head in the upper right section of the map. It's like most easily done by warping, but like,
oh, okay.
it's like a whole map wide chase instead of just that area.
Damn. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of these. And so it's basically not expected that any one person would figure out certainly all of them, but maybe even any of them. Like they're kind of, they're not designed to be solved by a typical player. He kind of just put them in just because he liked knowing. He's like, maybe someone will find one or two of them, but that's fine. But it turns out if you solve all of them, then basically for each one you solve, you go back to that bunny island in the other realm. That bunny will be there like eating. In a certain order. And then players figured out that if you go back to the office, the chalkboard has a little code on it that says, like, there's like a four-letter acronym that's like bunny. It's like
BDTP.
BDTP, which stands for Bunny Data Transfer Protocol.
Good.
And
good.
Basically,
yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page and I'm looking here that it's the clipboard shows a C struct. So that's interesting.
Yeah, there's a C struct. It says nibble and crumb. Basically, the direction of the bunny's ears when they're eating on that island encodes 2 bits. And
it encodes a struct.
Each bunny is a struct, yeah. And so, like, because the ears can either be, they can be in any, like, one of 4 directions. Actually, maybe it's a full bite. But basically, all 16 bunnies together those are number. It basically, each bunny contains 2 pieces of information. One is the index that the bunny needs to be read in, and 2 is a direction, like a cardinal direction. And so, if you take all those cardinal directions and present them in the order indicated by that first bit of information, then what you need to do is, starting from that island, go back into that second manticore and fly in those directions in that order. Like, it basically draws like a path for you to take flying through a series. Like, once you fly in this realm, all the screens look identical, except, so it's just like, I think I'm supposed to go left and then I'm supposed to go up. It's like, and it's 16 things long. But if you do it correctly, you'll end up at another island where there's a giant bunny and you go in front of him and he eats you and then he poops you out and it doesn't seem like anything's different. But then if you press jump while you're in the air, you turn into a moth and you can fly.
Sick.
And I think that's because Mexican jumping beans are moth larvae, right? Oh, we didn't say, but you're a Mexican jumping bean in this game. It's never told to you, but he confirmed on Discord. Someone guessed it. So now you just have a permanent upgrade where you can fly.
Sick.
Yeah.
I love that it creates a struct.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So that's layer 3. Layer 4 is actually that's bunnies slash moth should be what this is called. This is called time capsule. So pretty unrealistic that anyone would ever get this. Players figured this out in like a few days or something. It was crazy.
Insane.
Once you've done all of this, there's ways to interact with a game that where you're like bothering certain animals in certain ways. If you do things that are really the game doesn't expect you to do, certain animals will like yell at you, but the text box that has their dialogue will have these like fucked up looking characters in it. It looks like a glitch. Okay. For example, the bobcat puzzle where you unlock the wheel, the way you do that is by singing, like you free all of the bobcat kittens, and then you go and sing a particular song that you've unlocked by solving the puzzle. And then the mama bobcat opens up the cage with the wheel. If you happen to already know the song, because you've played the game already, and you go there and sing the song without freeing any of her kittens, you will get the wheel, but instead of the thing that says wheel, it will just have like these four random looking characters on it. And you just go, oh, that was weird. And then it disappears. I believe there's 16 things like this to do. One of them is if you have full health.
I'm becoming anxious that there's 16 of them again, because that's another programming structure size.
It's a similar type of puzzle. Yeah. You lose health and you can gain health back by eating a little fruit, right? It turns out that if you eat every fruit on the map while you have full health, like every time you eat fruit, he'll like make a little noise like, oh, if you have full health, he'll be like, I didn't need that, you know? But you can do that for every fruit. If you do that for every fruit, he will like go, ugh, and then make another little dialogue with weird symbols in it. There's one where if you trap the kangaroo, like by throwing a firecracker at him while he's like can't jump away in this certain part of the map, he'll like yell at you. There's a bunch of these. So if you take screenshots, I guess, of all of these symbols, it forms another like puzzle that you have to arrange them in a particular way. And one of the clues is this little painting in the background of the house. But you put together another map that draws for you a path to travel.
Okay.
Because these symbols actually, it's wingdings, basically. And so there's like arrows and stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's a bunch of like arrows and stuff.
Yeah.
And it roughly paints a two-dimensional map of like the bunny islands and stuff.
Yeah. So what you do is you start at the bunny, at the place where you turned into the moth, and you fly in following that path. And then
you fly because now you fly
with the moth. Yeah, you don't need the manticore. You're the moth now. Then you'll end up at another island where then you use the top and you dig out a time capsule that, has the recorded voice. Your character puts on headphones, so you unlock the headphones, which is cool, I guess. And then you listen to the recorded voices of Billy Basso, Dan Adelman, and Video Game Donkey talking to you, the player. And they're basically like, I never imagined anyone would ever get here. Like, if you're listening to this, like, holy shit, kind of deal.
Thanks for playing our game. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, how did people get these? Because like one of them is like the fruit message is obtained by eating 100 fruit without taking any damage while being on full health. It's like,
yeah,
who got that?
I don't know, man. People are crazy.
All right, and then there's also the cheater's ending, right? So one thing that I think that he ran into when he was developing this game is he's like, okay, well, are people just going to like take apart the files? Which I guess the fact that it's his own game engine maybe helps prevent, honestly, right? It's like a little bit harder. But people, like data miners are very good at this kind of thing. So it says here that some of the bunnies in the game are actually impossible to collect. But you can collect them if you were to be like decoding the game or hacking.
Yeah, there are actually 32 bunnies in the game. Yeah. Only 16 of them are legitimate.
And so if you get an illegitimate bunny, it will fuck up your code because now you'll have an invalid.
Like, yeah, you won't be able to do the bunny sequence. Puzzle.
Yeah, because there's no way to tell them apart.
Yeah, they're like in the map, but you would have to like clip through a wall to get it, basically, or wrong warp. Sure. So there are wrong warp glitches in this game, and people can use. So basically, there's this part of the map that you can see through. You can see through like in this one room. Like, man, I wish I could get over there. I don't know how. There's like an island there. Turns out there's no legitimate way to get there, but you can clip there using a wrong warp. Or I guess that's not a clip. Like, you play the flute to teleport, and you, like, do something with being on the edge of a platform, whatever. You teleport to this island, and then if you do it the right way, you can get and open this chest that says Cheater's Ring. Like, that's the item you get. And if you, I think, press, like, the right thumbstick in or something, like R3 or L3, it just turns on no clip. So you can just freely move throughout the whole game world, through all the walls. Which lets you see a lot of stuff that's hidden. Like there's a lot of like animals in little tiny alcoves inside of walls that if you go in them, they like have things to say to you. That's kind of, they'll be like, hey, I'm a baby sloth. I'm tired. You know, it's just a little cute stuff like that. and then there's the 16 bunnies, and three of the 16 illegitimate bunnies have switches in their rooms that if you press all three of them, it writes to memory in an invalid way, which I think is intentional, is like the theory that like there's an array of all of like the doors that have been activated, and these three like right past the end of that array, and so it will like corrupt other parts of your save. So I think he's like intentionally fucking with cheaters or data miners, being yeah. like, yeah, you can do this, but like there's traps for you. You know, it's like a honeypot.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find this on the Wikipedia page, but can't.
I don't know if it's on Wikipedia. It's there's a video. There's a YouTube video on it.
That's sick. I think that that's rad. You know, it's smart that he knows that people would try to bypass yeah. the actual mystery.
And some people, I think, actually got caught by it. Like, I've heard people saying, like, hey, I collected all 16 bunnies, but like the code, like it's not working. I can't get to bunny. I can't get to the island. And that's because probably they followed a guide that was written early enough where we didn't know which bunnies were legit and which ones weren't. And they got one of the bad bunnies.
One of the bad bunnies. The yeah. bad bunny is a musical recording artist.
He's an MRA. Yeah, exactly. A musical recording artist.
Is that?
No. But yeah, anyway. So like a lot of my enjoyment from this game just came from digging into what other people have already found, like watching YouTube videos exploring how far this stuff goes, and then doing
how far the rabbit hole.
Makes you feel like a rabbit,
or the bunny well.
Ooh,
rabbit hole, bunny well. Yeah, pretty good. Huh?
pretty darn good. Yeah,
pretty darn clever of me. Yeah, I think that's fair. It's Vodi Video, the video game. It's Vodi Video, kinda. Video game. A little bit. Well, any other thoughts that you have about the layers? Which layer was your favorite?
Which layer was my favorite? I like
why trending. Did you do the bunny and moth thing or no?
Yeah. I listened to the time capsule.
Do you get a... Oh, you listened to the time capsule. Damn. Do you get an achievement for doing so?
I played on PS5. I don't yeah. think so. No, there's no trophy for that.
That makes sense, because yeah. that would kind of reveal yeah, that yeah, there yeah, was yeah. something to find. Yeah.
There's other stuff that to mention. Like there's like a little Tamagotchi to find at the top of the well. You can go in and like depending on your... I think that's actually one of the hints for the time capsule puzzle is like you have to go to the Tamagotchi when your step count has looped past 10,000.
Oh, because there's a step counter.
There's a step counter, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Of course.
Do you think that... what do you think Barry's working on now?
Billy?
Billy's working on now.
I have
no idea. I think he's working on Animal Well 2.
Back
to the streets.
Based on what I know, what I've gathered about how this guy approaches things, I would be surprised if he were doing Animal Well 2.
Okay.
I think he's probably doing something new. I don't know. He's enjoying
his
success.
Do you think he's probably working with Big Mode again?
He said he enjoyed it. Like,
was this game? Obviously, this game sold well. I remember it selling yeah. well. But this game, like, it wasn't at the Game Awards or anything like that, right?
I don't know. Didn't it win some Best Metroid Brainia?
Yeah, it might have won Best Metroid Brainia. Animal Well, Wikipedia. We'll see. Did it get any reception? Animal Well is a 2D Metroidvania of the mind, the first of its kind video game.
Is that what it says on Wikipedia? No. Oh my god. No. You totally got me.
No, that'd be sick.
That's like not the tone of a Wikipedia article.
No. Okay, it won Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction at the DICE Awards.
Game direction. I mean, that's interesting because, like, Billy Basso did the whole thing. I guess he was the game director.
I mean, yeah, he did a good job. And then at the Game Awards, it was nominated for Best Indie Game and Best Debut Indie Game, but it did not win.
Oh, shucks.
Either of those.
What one?
And I'm going to, I'm going to try to find it out. It would have been Balatro. Same year as Balatro.
Well, that's tough competition. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a rough one. But, yep.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I recommend this game. Go check it out. It's a fun time. And we've spoiled the whole thing, so I think it's still enjoyable to play. But yeah, I have nothing else to say, really.
Sounds good. Well, for all of us here at the Boise, I don't know why I'm like, well, I feel, I don't really know. I can't really contribute that much except for like, well, yeah, it sounds cool. It sounds like a fun game.
I mean, yeah, what are you going to say?
And I didn't. but yeah, what are my closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts. Yeah. Yeah.
B-wand, best wand?
Best
or bubble wand? It's unknown.
Unknown.
It's
probably
vague.
Bubble wand, because bubble wand is a registered trademark of. No, I'm just kidding. What are we talking about next? Are we doing?
Well, you're behind. You're way behind.
Listen,
dude.
Listen,
you haven't played.
Listen.
You haven't played Shadow of the Erdtree. You haven't played that much of Night Rain. You haven't played Metaphor Refantasio. You're behind on Clair Obscura Expedition 33. I mean, probably that's the one that we'll do next.
No, we're doing Hollow Knight next because I'm gonna. No, we're doing Silksong next, honestly, because that's coming out. It's coming fucking out.
We also haven't played very much Mario Kart World.
You think really think we could do an episode on Mario Kart World?
There's a whole world to see.